Okay, we'll call to order the meeting of Planning and Zoning Commission for Currie Beach on Wednesday, January 6, 2021. This was originally scheduled for 6:30, but because of our rather lengthy Historic Preservation Commission meetings, we are starting a little late. First item on the agenda is adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, second item is adoption of the minutes. Just go ahead and take a minute and look at the minutes. Pretty short minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Yes.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Public comment, again, do we have anybody online for public comment?
Okay.
No. Nobody's online, so we'll go to old business. First item is prohibited uses, and we might be able to bring closure to this discussion. Mr. Eldridge.
I thought your idea of how to approach prohibited uses by requiring everything that isn't on the table to be a special use permit is a great idea. It should be an easy measure to draft. Thank you. And but I just didn't have any, I couldn't get to it with everything else going on with the design standards and the regulations. So I'll bring it to you next month.
And that's basically probably doing a word replace and just replace.
Well, I think I'll, excuse me, I've got a sore over my throat. I think I'll probably, I don't know what sections of the code to amend, but I may go into the prohibited use section and just put one or two sentences that, to the extent that if it's not on the table of uses, it's a special use permit, which will be processed and determined in accordance with KBC 15, I think it's 3680 and 3690. Just a pretty simple fix, but I want to look, I've got to check a couple of other areas to make sure I don't miss something that needs to be tweaked in relation there too.
Okay, so just to kind of summarize this rather lengthy multi-month conversation we've had about the legal cases and that how we needed to identify specific uses we did not want to have in the various districts, and we couldn't have the word that if it's not included, it's prohibited, that you will go ahead and change that language. Basically, that if it's not included, it needs a special use permit rather than being prohibited.
That reminds me, I think I have to double check that you may, I don't know if you've got that catch-all provision that was voided by the courts.
Now, that's what we do have that.
So I need to.
That's the key thing that needs to be changed.
You need to delete that right. In addition to tweaking the special use permit.
Yeah, or simply do a replace and say if it's not included, rather than saying it's prohibited, simply say it's required to have a special use permit.
I'll figure out a good way to do it.
Okay. I don't think we need a motion for that, but is that the consensus of the P&Z?
Sounds good.
Sounds good? Okay.
Yes.
I'll bring that to you next month for review, comment, and consistency statement.
Okay. Very good. Land use plan, there's no updates on land use plan right now, I don't think. I do know that, I guess the only update is that has there been a decision about hiring a consultant at all? We did hear the presentation by...
We're still discussing it.
Still discussing it, okay. All right. Other than that, there's no update on land use plan. New business. I would I would propose or make the motion that we table this item, given our discussions. This has to do with the text amendment related to the historic district.
How long of a discussion is it likely to be?
Chairman, I certainly see the wisdom of tabling the review report and consistency statement, but it may be advisable to walk through these regulations since they intermesh with the design standards.
Is that okay with everybody? Yeah. Okay, all right. Let's go ahead. I will withdraw the motion at this point.
So, if, yeah, Mandy, I need the text amendments first. We'll come back to that pretty quickly. We're going to walk through these real quickly. The current code only contemplates one overlay district, and now we're proposing to add an additional overlay district. So I had to make some syntactical revisions in the beginning and through the K Avenue provisions. For example, I made the definition applicable to both districts, and in K Avenue I simply made a few grammar type things, but mainly referenced it as the mixed use overlay district, MUOD, and just kept that theme throughout, simply to make it distinct from the additional overlay district, which starts on page, Mandy, if you want to go to page 6. Do we have any council members on this call? Now, before we get to this, I'd like Mandy to hit that other document so we can look at it for a second.
Which one?
This one. If, can we reduce the, can we make it a little smaller? Mm-hmm. That's good. Can you all see that okay? Or you can read, you might want to make it bigger for them, I guess. Thank you, that's good.
That's good.
Oh, sorry.
We're good.
Computer gets away from it.
I was really struck when I went back. Well, first of all, in the introduction, Chairman references during the HPC meetings, but under North Carolina General Statutes, you cannot regulate exterior features on residential units, except there's a prohibition against it. So the question is, how can you control the exterior appearance? And the chairman is right. The only way in North Carolina to do that is through a certificate of appropriateness for historical districts, which allow you to regulate exterior portions. A special use approach doesn't get to it because special use is use, not appearance. So the only way to control the way something looks in a particular place is through the historic district approach. And as I mentioned before, I think Curry Beach is particularly lucky that the K1 neighborhood looks like it does now at this late stage of the game. But it certainly risks losing that charm if nothing is done. And again, I think the only thing that can be done, which seems to have been a consensus through each of the town boards and commissions, is this historical district approach. So I went back and looked at the LUP provisions, and I was completely struck by, well, we'll just read them. These come from 2006. Curry Beach desires to ensure that future development will be consistent with the historic small town nature of the community. The primary concern was that Curry Beach should preserve its small town character. Second one, Curry Beach has managed to save its historic charm. Much of the municipality developed in a way which became the traditional type development for North Carolina beach communities. The town has done a far better job of holding on to its identity than many other beach municipalities. Increasing development pressures for more dense and intense commercial residential development have been issues since the last plan update in 1997. That's why I say you guys are lucky. You still got to be one as it is. But look how prescient these comments were from 14 years ago. They mirror exactly what we're talking about tonight. The next highlight, the town of Curie Beach wishes to keep the small town atmosphere which long-term residents have come to love. And if you can scroll down a little bit to the end of the page, please. The D1 district is primarily built out with a mix of structures built more recently and structures that are 30 to 50 years or more old. The B1 district will continue to be the center of all town resident and tourism associated business. The town wishes to conserve the commercial district. I just think it's remarkable how what we're trying to do in 2021 with the historic district is perfectly reflected in these public concerns set forth as the town's policies and objectives for land use as written in 2006. I just think it's remarkable how much it fits. So getting to the district itself, subsection A sets out the purpose and intent. We've really talked about those quite a bit. I don't think I need to spell them out. B is pursuant to statute that this adoption of these proposed text amendments would result in the designation of the historic overlay district, which I've abbreviated as HOD. It's actually the downtown preservation and historic overlay district, but for purposes of the code, I've shortened that HOD. Effect of the HOD, I'm reading from subsection C. These HOD regulations apply in combination with the underlying B1 district regulations and all other code provisions. In circumstances where B1 regulations are silent or where the HOD regulations, which is what you've got in front of, conflict with the B1 regulations, then the HOD regulations will be controlling. Unlike K Avenue mixed use, where you can only use a property in accordance with a special use permit that you obtain, in the HOD, you can all use permitted in the B1 district, whether by right or as a special use, shall also be permitted in the HOD. So B1 controls use is not a special use permit as required in K Avenue. The design standards, buildings and structures within the HOD shall comply with the design standards which we discussed at great length. Certificates of appropriateness under F. A COA shall be required for any erection, alteration, restoration, relocation, demolition, or destruction of any exterior portion of any building or structure within the HOD. Number two, and that's right from the statute. Number two, where required, practically all of this is from the statute. Where required, a COA will be granted prior to the issuance of a building permit, and the building permit needs to be in conformity with the COA. Now we have an exception to needing to obtain a COA, the minor work exception. Nothing in this section shall be construed to prevent minor work on any exterior feature in the district. For purposes of this section, For purposes of this section, minor work shall be interpreted and construed to mean ordinary maintenance, minor repairs, and other work which does not involve a substantial change in the design, material, or appearance of an exterior feature. So you see that any work that doesn't involve an exterior feature does not even come under the scope of these regulations. It's only changes, minor and major, to the exterior portion. As Mr. Garceau commented, one of the gatekeepers for that distinction would be the building inspections. If it's simple enough, they can handle it. If they have questions, they can pass it off to the HPC. And that's what two and three, well, that's what two is all about. Minor work may be administratively approved by the building inspector without a COA hearing. The request shall be made in writing, describe the work to be performed, and show that the work complies with the standards, and a dated letter approving or denying the request shall be issued by the building inspector. Number three, if the applicant doesn't like the decision, they can appeal that decision in writing to the HPC and deliver it to the HPC's clerk, Ms. Chase, presently. And it gives you the timelines for doing that. HPC's decision shall be made, the HPC will conduct a hearing in a regular or special meeting no earlier than 10 days after the date we receive the appeal. The decision will be made in writing, delivered to the appellant, because they can go on and seek DOA review thereafter. So that's why you have the timelines and mechanisms in there. Applications for the COA and payment of any fee shall be made to the building inspector on forms available in that department. Each application shall include sketches, drawings, photographs, specifications, descriptions, and or other material describing the proposed work and how it complies. We're not asking for a preliminary and final plat. We're just asking for the information that shows what you expect the proposed, that show what changes you're proposing, what those changes will look like, and how they fit with the design standards and the review criteria. Again, in other words, how are those proposed changes consistent and harmonious with the rest of the neighborhood? Again, that's the burden on the applicant, not the HPC or John. Building inspectors shall review each application and make a report to HPC. J is simply the procedures for the quasi-judicial hearing in terms of notice and decision making. These are important, and they are set out in black and white in the statutes. But it's good to know what they are. A notice of hearing shall be mailed to the person or entity whose application is subject, to the owner of the property if not the applicant, and to the owners of all parcels of land abutting the property, including those directly across the street. The notice of hearing shall be deposited in the mail at least 10 days before, but not more than 25. In addition, the hearing shall be posted. Number four, HPC clerk will provide written certifications of the mailed and posted notice. They'll become part of the hearing record. Let me say this. Appeals to the BOA are not de novo. The BOA will review the HPC proceedings. So it's very important at the HPC level that a record is made of what the applicant is applying for and the materials he or she submits, along with the building inspections report, along with certification that proper notices have been provided. All that will constitute the record of the HPC hearing, and when appeal is made to the BOA, that record will be transmitted to the BOA, and they'll simply look at that record. They won't consider the topic anew, except for the issue of whether or not the application applies or does not, complies or does not comply. In other words, no new evidence will be taken at the BOA level. Number five, HPC clerk shall transmit to the HPC all applications, reports, and written materials. Now, there's a little wrinkle here. Normally, in a quasi-judicial proceeding, you don't get that information ahead of time because of the due process requirement of having an impartial decision maker. In this case, the statutes allow materials of those administrative materials to be distributed to the HPC members prior to the hearing, provided that at the same time they're distributed to the applicant and to the property owners. So in other words, agenda packets are fine, but you got to make sure the applicant and the property owner, if not the applicant, also gets a copy of that agenda packet. Objections to the inclusion or exclusion of materials may be made before and after hearing that should be ruled on after hearing. There's more on that in a minute. The applicant, for those of you who don't know, a quasi-judicial hearing is, in its proper form, is more like a trial and unlike completely a public hearing. You're not getting people standing up and making comments. You're having the applicant and those in opposition to the applicant, if they meet certain requirements, come forth and present sworn testimony and exhibits in showing, putting forth evidence that what they want to do complies with these regulations and the design standards. So it's not a public hearing, it's a mini trial. So you will rule on objections, but that's, I say that because of number seven, the applicant, the town, and any person or entity having standing to participate in that particular topic shall have the right to participate at the evidentiary hearing, meaning that the commission can certainly direct examine the witness, but likewise, the witness has the ability to cross-examine the applicant and vice versa. It's just like a trial. So if the applicant makes their case, Ms. Jones, who lives across the street and who can show special damages as the result of the proposed exterior changes, can cross-examine the applicant. In practice, it hardly ever happens because nobody knows what the heck a quasi-judicial proceeding is. But that's why the town attorney helps to facilitate those procedures. Number eight, this is how you handle objections. Objections concerning jurisdictional and evidentiary issues, including the timeliness of an appeal or the standing of the party to participate, may be made to the HPC. HPC chair shall rule by himself or herself on any objection. However, the chair's rulings may be appealed to the full HPC, which will decide the issue by majority vote. Chairman might determine that a particular appeal is not timely, but that ruling by that particular appellant can be appealed to the whole board right then and there. I would like the board to vote on that particular objection. And depending on the majority vote, that would be the final resolution of that particular objection. I didn't put it in here, but you've also got the ability to subpoena witnesses and documents. Now, I've never seen it used, but I think that's a powerful tool for, say, a particular red button issue. HPC decision, again, heavily regulated by statute. Number two at the bottom, you can approve with modifications, which simply are conditions that are reasonable in light of the subject matter, or deny the application. Next page, top of. The tricky part is prior to taking final application on an application, the HPC shall make written findings of fact based upon the review criteria and design standards, and indicating the extent to which the application is or is not compatible with the district, the review criteria, and the design standards. Those findings will be entered into the minutes. The statute says HPC shall make its decision within a reasonable time, but that decision has to be made by the commission as a whole during an open session of a special or regular meeting. So I put in there preferably during the meeting in which the application was considered. It's interesting, Chapter 160D, with respect to the timeliness of when you make the decision and the timeliness with which it is presented to the applicant, for some reason they've left that within a reasonable time and not specified certain times, which I have kind of tweaked a little bit. Number seven, the decision shall be effective on the day it's filed. It has to be delivered via personal delivery, electronic mail, or certified mail to the applicant or others. And the person providing notice of the decision, the clerk shall certify in writing that proper notice has been provided. That certification will also become part of the hearing record and be deemed conclusive. Review criteria. These are the counterparts or directly related to the design standards. These are applied to determining an application just as the design standards are. The regulations set forth herein in the design standards are intended to, insofar as is reasonable, now that's another qualification, ensure that the exterior portions of the buildings and structures within the district shall be harmonious. However, it is not the intent of these regulations or the design standards to require the reconstruction or restoration of any building or structure, prohibit their demolition or removal, or impose any architectural style. That should alleviate a lot of issues that might come from a misapprehension of our approach. In determining a COA application, the HPC shall consider the historic significance of the building or structure, the exterior form and appearance of the proposed changes, and the effect those changes would have upon the other buildings and structures within the district. Number three is also reassuring to anyone who has issues with this approach. HPC shall make no requirement except to prevent work that is inconsistent with the district. That's a simple sentence, but it has a big import to it. Number four, COA applicants shall consult the design standards which the town will utilize. I said town because of staff's involvement of minor work in determining authorizations. And then number five, HPC shall base its COA decision on the design standards and the following: the height of the building or structure, the setbacks, lot coverage, yards, yada, 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 materials, surface textures and patterns, architectural details, roof shapes, forms, features, materials, fenestration proportions, shapes, positions, locations, and patterns as windows and doors, general form and proportions of the building or structure, and appurtenant features including lighting, walls, and fences. And another reassurance, interior arrangements are not considered at all by HPC. Relocation and demolition, again, we're going to shorten that to a simple sentence saying that applications for a COA for those purposes shall not be denied. O is also a major reassurance. Nothing in these regulations or the design standards shall be construed to prevent ordinary maintenance or repair of any exterior feature that does not involve a change in design, material, or appearance. Again, I want to read that. Nothing in these regulations or standards shall be construed to prevent ordinary maintenance or repair of any exterior feature that does not involve a change in design, material, or appearance, nor to prevent the construction, reconstruction, yada, 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 of any exterior feature that the building inspector shall certify in writing as required for public safety. Nothing in these regulations or in the design standards shall be construed to prevent a property owner from making any use of his property that is not prohibited by any of the law. P is successive applications. If you're denied, you can reapply only if there's been substantial changes in the property or in your proposal. Q is appeals to the Board of Adjustment. Again, statutory required. It is what it is. Lapse of approval. All COAs shall expire 1 year from the date of issuance. HPC can grant an extension up to 1 year provided substantial progress has been made or unforeseen difficulties caused the delay. Compliance. Failure to comply with the COA shall constitute a violation of Chapter 15 and shall be enforceable as provided under that cited section of civil penalty. The discontinuance of work or the lack of substantial progress for a period of 1 year shall be considered as a failure to comply, and the enforcement of any remedy under Chapter 15 shall not prevent the application of any other remedy. I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have.
That's pretty thorough.
Yeah.
And I think reassuring.
Yes.
What, what's the next action with that? Obviously,
well, the this is the actual text amendment that would have to be approved by the P&Z, passed on to town council, then town council. This is actually what town council would set the public hearing for, because this is the text amendment related to Chapter 15. So we have two choices. We can either table this item until after, until next, our next meeting, or we could approve this item, pass it forward to the town council, and they could decide what to do with this. I would recommend tabling the item personally until after the.
Shouldn't we have the get together before this goes up? Or?
I mean, that's what I would.
Yeah.
I would sense. Just like to have some time with it, you know, that we just read right through, but I'd like to reread it again.
So.
So let's see, timing-wise, we're going to have our meeting, our joint meeting in January.
Late January.
And then we meet in early February, so the...
Assuming that we can kind of work out any differences and get something that works with everybody, in our February HBC and our February P&Z, we would look at this text amendment by P&Z, we would look at the design guidelines by HBC, and then
pass off
the text amendment to the town council for their February meeting. They would set probably a March public hearing for that.
So then that makes sense, because then we're doing everything following the joint meeting, and it kind of keeps things in order. So I agree. If you're making a motion to table it, I'll second it.
So been motion to table, seconded. Any further discussion?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. And is there a motion to adjourn?
Absolutely.
Second.
Very good. Okay. And do I know there's things I have to sign.
No, because text.
Minutes, right.